Don't be sad that it's over. Be happy that it happened. This is the Matt Forney Show. I'm Matt Forney, your charming and loquacious host. This is episode number 150, and it is Friday, October 12th, 2018. I'm sure a lot of you are like, oh wow, an actual recorded podcast instead of these live streams. Well, for at least the past 2.5 years, the Matt Forney Show has basically been whenever I feel like doing a show, or whenever I have the time to do a show. I haven't put out podcasts under this name on a regular schedule for the longest time. And there are many reasons for that. Lack of time, lack of motivation, censorship, many other reasons. But I figured at 150 episodes, if this is a place to end it, this is an ideal place to end it. Now, I don't want to say that the show is never coming back. There are various reasons in the future I might do a podcast. I reserve the right to pick right back up. But those of you who don't follow my YouTube channel, I've been doing a regular show called Matt Forney Live twice a week. It airs at the moment every Monday and Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. We're generally on the air for about a couple hours every day. I take calls, I discuss the news, I go off on things that annoy me, I have guests. And it has, for all intents and purposes, replaced the Matt Forney Show. Some of that is due to my own choices. Some of that is due to changing audience tastes. Some of that is due to algorithmic censorship. But the simple reality is that I don't see podcasts having much of a future for anyone. This is because, well, in my specific case, there is far more of an incentive to do live streams than there is to do podcasts. Live streams can be monetized very easily if you're broadcasting on YouTube. We have the Super Chat system now, which was implemented last year, that allows readers, viewers who are watching live, to send a donation and have one of their comments pinned. It's a way to get your message out in front of the entire audience. And I make the amount of money I've been making with Super Chats have been going up and up and up, so. And there's also Streamlabs Tips, which is the same system, except it's not controlled by Google. And also, you can have it on multiple broadcasting platforms. For example, I simulcast all of my live streams on YouTube and Twitch, and the Twitch users can use Streamlabs as well. There's also the fact that Google isn't taking a 30% cut out of it like they are with the Super Chats, so that's some people prefer the Streamlabs Tips. When I grow my Twitch channel a bit more, I'll be able to monetize that specifically as well. But with the podcast, there's really no way to monetize it. I used to run ads on these podcasts as well as ads on my website, but advertising is pretty much dead. It was ailing when I first started this podcast over 5 years ago. I wasn't in the greatest of spots, but it was a good way to monetize the podcast. But now, getting people to advertise on podcasts or on websites is pretty much impossible, and for good reason. You know, ad block is pretty much universal. Nobody looks at the ads. Nobody clicks on the ads. You know, that's why we're facing a major crisis with the internet right now in terms of its organization, because websites, major websites, are funded primarily through ads. That's where you get all this, you know, turn off that pesky ad block, you know, you now have these little JavaScript things on major websites, blocking access if you happen to have an ad block enabled on your browser. So there's no way for me to monetize the podcast in that way. I did try doing a subscription podcast at one point, the Matt Forney After Hours. That was, last year. But the issue of doing podcasts in general compared to live streams, this is number two. Live streams simply are less effort. With the podcast, I have to sit down, record it, I have to stitch the various segments together, I've got to edit and process it so that it sounds good, I have to upload it, I have to do all that. With a live stream, all I really have to do is, beyond getting topics together, beyond doing show prep, is just turn my program on and just talk. There's no editing, there's none of this other nonsense. The amount of work that goes into doing a live stream is much lower than that of a podcast, and the return is much higher. And we've seen this with the transition to live streams in pretty much every capacity. You know, there are a few, not both among podcasters and among YouTubers. You know, we have guys like Jay Dyer, who did pre-recorded lectures for the longest time, which have now started doing those live for the Super Chat money. Number three, live streams are just more listen to than podcasts because they have that interactivity element. You know, with a podcast, you really can't interact with a podcast. You listen to it and that's it. But if you watch someone streaming live, you can comment in the chat. You can send them super chats. If they allow call-ins, you can call in. you can interact with a live stream in the way that you simply can't with a podcast. And I've seen this myself. My live content gets far more views. Even back before, when I was still doing the podcast regularly, before all these changes happened after Trump's election with regards to audience tastes and whatnot, I was getting more views on my live content than my pre-recorded content. So that's in part why I don't do videos anymore. I used to do fairly regular videos on my YouTube channel talking about various issues, but if people want to watch live streams, who am I to question that, you know? So this may be the last episode of the Matt Forney Show ever recorded. It may not be, you know, but I don't see any other... I don't see myself returning to it anytime soon. That said, the Matt Forney Show on SoundCloud and iTunes is not going to go away. From this point forward, for those of you who are SoundCloud subscribers, I'm going to be uploading audio-only recordings of the Matt Forney Show after it airs. Because a lot of people have been asking me about that. They want the show in podcast format because it's easy to listen to in the car, easy to download to your phone. So starting on Monday, which is when the next stream will be, I will be uploading audio versions of Matt Forney Live to the SoundCloud page and then by extension to iTunes and all the other places where it's fed out to. So you'll be able to listen to that. It's a nice convenience thing. You know, I'm paying $15 a month to maintain this because it's the primary archive of the Matt Forney Show. I have some of the episodes up on YouTube, but the vast majority of them, with the exception of, I think, like... The most recent 30 or so episodes, actually not even that, more like the most recent 20 or so episodes, they're on SoundCloud. So I'm paying for that, and I might as well use the SoundCloud page to do this as well and expand the reach of the show. There will also be an interactivity element for those of you who listen via the podcast. Streamlabs, like I said, is one of the systems I use to have people support the show and have their comments read aloud on the show. So if you have a comment you want me to read aloud on the next episode of Matt Forney Live, if you're a podcast listener, you can go to streamlabs.com/Matthew Forney in order to have me leave a comment there, and I will get to it on the next episode of the program. Those of you who aren't subscribed to my YouTube or Twitch channels, which is where you can watch the Matt Forney Live when it airs, you can go to youtube.com/user/realMattForney and twitch.tv/MattForney. If you have a Twitch account, I would encourage you to listen over there because I've been trying to get more subscribers and people watching over there in order to monetize it because their monetization requirements are rather strict. The same content is available on both channels. The only difference is that with YouTube, I'll have everything going in perpetuity, and with Twitch, after shows are only available for a couple weeks. That's just how Twitch works. Twitch is not a video sharing service; it's a streaming service. So you can watch every. And if anything happens to the YouTube channel, it gets striked, and just one strike on a YouTube channel prevents you from streaming. Twitch is the backup channel for streams. So I heartily encourage you to subscribe to both if you haven't already, and really consider Twitch if you have a Twitch account. Good things are around the bend. And thinking about it, when I say it out loud, I've been doing this show for over 5 years. It sounds pretty amazing, and it is because... Really, most internet stuff doesn't last very long. Trends move on, and their trends are burning themselves out at a far faster pace than even I imagined. Like, it's the light speed. I mean, if you recall, you remember internet blood sports, you know, back in the dark ages? That was a trend earlier in the year that burned itself out in, what, 4 months? Not even, I think. You know, it started with Sargon debating Richard Spencer, and then it ended with you know, Worski and JF at each other's throats. It ended with Baked Alaska getting dragged by everyone. It ended with everyone's channels getting striked, whether it was Tonka or Ralph or whoever. And so having someone who's been around creating content for nearly 10 years, in my case, since I started in Malafati back in 2009, that's basically like the Jurassic period. The internet has changed so much in that period. Hell, the internet has changed so much in the period since I started this show. And if you'll permit me to go a bit down memory lane, I started doing the Matt Forney show back in 2013, primarily because I saw everyone else doing it. That was the trend at the when I was still part of the Manosphere. That was the trend at the time. People were doing podcasts. Everyone was starting podcasts. Aaron Clary had a podcast. Davis Cerini had a podcast. Dagonet had a podcast. A lot of people who have been forgotten have had podcasts. Well, I guess Dagonet is one of those people. He doesn't blog anymore. If I threw out names like Don Lack and, you know, Peter Phoenix, a lot of the listeners probably wouldn't even recognize them. But I saw everyone doing a podcast. Be like, hey, I'll jump into the fray. You know, it's something new to do. Practice my skills. And you can almost neatly divide the Matt Forney show into several eras, seasons, whatever you want to call it. Based on the approach I was taking at the time and the sort of content, the sort of things I talked about. So we had the first stage, which was from August 2013 to, I'd say, maybe about June 2015, though there were several mini stages within that. This was me kind of sort of, with the first few months, it was me getting my bearings and learning how to do a podcast. Like, the first few podcasts, all my podcasts are still online, though with censorship increasing, who knows how long that'll be. My first few podcasts back in 2013 were fucking terrible. You know, I talked over myself, I talked too fast, you know, I bounced around from topic to topic, I couldn't concentrate, I had no flow, I didn't really do prep. I also did some interviews, podcast interviews around that time with people like Andy Nowicki, and those interviews were not, those were a bit better, but they weren't that great. They weren't that spectacular. Additionally, limiting the growth of the podcast was the fact that I distributed it only on my website. I tried to get it onto iTunes, but for whatever reason, my website would not feed the RSS feed to iTunes properly. So basically, my blog was the only place you could listen to it. And I didn't want to pay for a SoundCloud subscription because, like, yeah, I got a website. Why should I pay for an additional service? What I didn't realize is that a lot of the podcast listening audience was on SoundCloud, or at least it was back then. Don't know about now. And by not going on SoundCloud, I was limiting the growth of the podcast. So basically, for the first few months, I was kind of fumbling around getting my bearings. Around, I believe it was April 2014, I was able to introduce consistent theme music for the podcast, which was nice. I also started doing I had advertising on the podcast. I started doing that around the same time. And what I would do is I would structure it like a radio show where I would do individual segments of the show, and then I would insert podcasts like in between these segments. Those were pre-recorded beforehand. Probably not the best maneuver because, you know, having commercials on a live radio show makes sense, on the AM or FM radio, because the listener can't just fast forward for the commercials, but they can on a podcast. So I don't know how effective that was for the advertisers, but I did it at the time. And I also had little music bumpers to, do all that because, well, podcasting is basically just bootleg radio. You know, live streaming is basically just bootleg radio. And that's the only reason why live streaming has replaced podcasts, you know, because it has the live element, which everyone wanted to do. Podcasting was just, was kind of a stopgap, before that technology to broadcast live really came into its own. So when live streaming became easy and accessible to the average content creator, that's when we saw podcasts just taking a dip off of the diving board. But anyway, during this era, you know, I more or less did a podcast every single week. There were like one or two weeks where I missed it, but back then I actually had a little thing where I did extra podcasts in a week to compensate for that. But we made it to around June 2015, and that was when I gave the podcast a significant overhaul. I What I did was I changed up the music, number one. And number two, I changed my recording technique to where instead of doing the entire show in one shot, what I did was I would talk about individual subjects. I'd stop, take a break, and then do it again. And then I'd edit it all together seamlessly in Audacity afterwards so that there was no breaks. And it sounded much better because I was not, near the end of an hour long podcast, your voice is going to start croaking and whatnot. You're going to start losing your bearings. But at the end of this, with this method, the podcast quality was dramatically improved. It was also around this time that I started having sidekicks to sort of vary things up and have more of an interplay and guest focus show instead of just me rambling about whatever happened to be on my mind. We had a contest in September 2015 to determine who would be my sidekick. The three picks were Ann Sturzinger, the Beckloff, and William Rome. And I put that up to the audience for a vote, and Ann won. I think it was like Ann got 48%, Beckloff got like 44%, and William Rome got the rest. Ann was my podcast for the next 3 months after that. She was removed from the podcast in December 2015 for reasons that I don't need to rehash. From there, I tried to keep the sidekick format going with William Rome initially and then Beckloff. But eventually, in 2016, that's when the show sort of became a whenever I had time to do one type show. It no longer became weekly simply because I didn't have time. What happened then was that in January 2016 was when I started heavily reporting on the presidential election. In January 2016, that was when I went to Iowa to cover the Iowa caucuses. And I was so busy that couple of weeks just driving around everywhere, doing this, doing that, that I simply did not have time to sit down and record a podcast, let alone edit it for consumption. At one point, I tried doing what Aaron Clary does with like the road podcast, where he'll just dictate into his phone while he's driving. But with the specific car I had, it was impossible because I had one of those hybrid cars that has a partial electric or green friendly engine. And the damn thing just hummed it sounded like a bumblebee orgy. It made so much noise whenever I was driving on the highway that the audio recordings I made were absolute shit. I did record a podcast while I was there. I was Carl Lushanka, but this is after already missing the one podcast slot I should have done 1 week, and I wasn't able to get the podcast with Ushanka up until after I got home to Chicago, simply because I didn't have time to edit it. And from there, the podcast sort of became a solo occasional whenever I was able to get one done type deal. I formally ended the Matt Forney Show for the time being in May of 2016, because at that time, Daniel Freeberg, the CEO of Arctos, and at the time the editor, publisher of Write On, a site that I was writing for a lot and doing a lot of election coverage for, he approached me and asked me if I'd wanted to do a podcast for Write On, a podcast that I'd be getting paid for. It would basically be the same sort of thing I'd been doing with the Sturzinger sidekick era of the show, where I would bring guests on and just interview them about a topic. So basically what I was already doing, the difference being that I would actually get paid for it. And I'd also have a much larger audience because, Write On was exposing my work to a large European audience that had not been familiar with me before. So I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to do a podcast for you. And they paid me a good deal to do those podcasts. And I retired the Matt Forney Show at the time because, I'm moving on to another podcast. I'm moving on to another project. So that was May 2016, and the podcast basically ended then. I decided to revive it a couple of months later. I think in August. Yeah, August 2016. The new edition of the podcast was going to be more of an audio essay type deal. Instead of just me picking news stories and talking about those, I would pick one particular issue that had my goat, and I would go on about it for about half hour, 40 minutes. They'd be a bit shorter, a bit more personal. And this format was surprisingly popular, even though it didn't last very long. I think I did 7 episodes with this format because, again, work got ahead of me, and I simply couldn't. And when it came to prioritizing work, this was This was had to go first. I did two really popular episodes under this format. I did one about The Amazing Atheist. That's episode number 132, discussing how he groomed a mentally retarded tranny and sexually abused her to the point where she had to be institutionalized. And I did an episode on Brock Turner and sexual degeneracy and all of that. That was also quite popular. But this edition of the show kind of faded away. I was still doing This Alt-Right Life. I would end up doing This Alt-Right Life through January of 2017, where the podcast ended there because Righton was merged into altright.com, and I was not allowed to join altright.com by Richard Spencer, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise, but it resulted in basically the end of the show. I said at the time it was going on indefinite hiatus, but you know, the show is gone. It's not coming back, particularly with what's happened to the alt-right since then. I revived the Matt Forney Show in March of 2017 with a sort of going back to the original format of me talking about the news of the day. What I did in addition to this was I also unveiled the subscription-only podcast, Matt Forney After Hours, where I would talk about issues that were too extreme for the main show. They were too extreme for the main podcast, or they were just premium content that took far more effort to get together. And I liked the Matt Forney After Hours episodes. Those came together really well. We did two really good episodes. Those are some of the best podcasts I've done of anything, regardless of what name it is. But we did two that I'm particularly proud of. We did one on gamma males. This was a roundtable discussion with me, David Cerini, Daniel Freeberg, and Melissa Mazeros. We had a good time doing that. And number seven was a discussion I had with David Cerini on women with borderline personality disorder. That one, I think, is probably the best of the series because it's the most genuinely useful. Because borderlines are running rampant. Women with BPD are running rampant. They're ruining men's lives, you know, driving them to suicide, driving them to ruin, putting them in prison. And we discussed, how do you identify borderline women? How do you deal with them? How do you get them out of your life? The podcast ended abruptly. This era of the podcast ended abruptly because I got a new job and it was far more lucrative than what I was doing with the podcast. See, around this time, back around January 2017, after the inauguration, I noticed that the search traffic to my site took a sudden dip, a sudden unexplained dip. I'd never seen this before. And because most of my like book sales and other ways I make money with the site were the result of random search traffic, because of this, I basically lost my entire income stream. You know, I had to get a job in order to make ends meet. You know, and even to this day, I'm making even less money than I was then. I could shut my entire online presence down today, and I would barely notice it with regards to my bank account. But I got a new job at the end of April, and I decided to focus on this because it was something more lucrative. You know, the subscription-only podcast made some money, but it was not making anywhere near the amount of money that would justify the time I was putting into it. Recording a podcast beyond the, you know, like I was talking about earlier with the differences between live streams and podcasts. The time recording the podcast is just like one small slice of the time you need to dedicate to when you're actually doing one. You have to edit it, obviously. You have to upload it. You have to promote it, etc. And Matt Forney After Hours, I would have been hoping to get it to the point where I would be able to really make a living off of it, or at least turn it into a good income stream, but what a better opportunity came along to make more money for less effort, I had to take it. You know, that's just how it happened. And from there, the podcast sort of became a whenever I could get one done. Like, I was doing one at the rate, like, one every 3 months. And the last podcast I've done before this last recorded podcast was back in March, I think. I was talking about the Parkland shooting. So that's the history of the Matt Forney Show. You know, it's a history marked by not just changes in my life, but changes in public taste, changes in the online marketplace. And simply put, In terms of effort, there really is there simply is no reason to do a podcast anymore if you have the ability to live stream. You know, I'd be making even more money and have more listeners with my live stream if I could broadcast at a late hour for an hour appropriate for American listeners. I broadcast you know, 2 p.m. Eastern right now because I live in Georgia, the country, not the state, and you know, I'm 9 hours ahead of Eastern time. I can't do a show at what is 4 a.m. my time and expect it to be any good. See, all the through this time when I was doing podcasts, I started doing live streams more regularly in like the first live stream I did was like 4 years ago. That was Gamergate kind of popularized them to a certain extent. This is before Super Chat, so no one was really making any money off of them. And I did a few live streams in 2015. But it wasn't until 2016 that I started really doing them to sort of cover, you know, breaking news events. Because, again, in their case, even then back then, you were advantaged by the fact that you could do a live stream instantly and get it out instantly instead of having to edit and do all this other stuff with a podcast or a video. I did live streams more regularly in 2017, usually when I was bored. Quality wasn't that great, but, you know, they helped get me an audience. And this year is the year I started doing them seriously on a regular schedule with show prep and taking it seriously, and it's gone quite well for me so far, you know, so I'm going to keep going on with that. I do kind of miss the old podcast format in some respects, but, you know, the reality is that people have moved on, you know, just thinking about all the changes that have happened in the time since I started writing online and podcasting online and being a public figure, it sounds ridiculous, but I almost get a little teary-eyed because thinking just how much things have changed and how much worse things are going to get. And I say things are going to get worse because they are. That's just the simple reality of it. As independent content creators, as alternative media personalities, we've had to completely restructure our lives around the censorship with Silicon Valley. You know, we have to change what we say. We have to choose our words carefully. We can't troll anymore. We can't be as honest. In extreme cases, like, for example, you have the Weekly Sweat, Beardson, Beardley, and Hubris. They can't leave episodes of their show up because if they do, they'll get striked and then they won't be able to stream. So they delete their show after they air it. So if you don't listen to it live, that's pretty much it. And we all talk about how, the censorship, Silicon Valley, these censors have gone too far. We're going to take a stand, but nobody's going to take a stand. We can't take a stand. You know, I talked about this earlier this week on the live stream, on Wednesday's live stream, talking about the Chinese social credit system and how, you know, your Mark Zuckerbergs and Jack Dorseys are just salivating to implement a similar system in the West. We already have a kind of a prototype social credit system anyway, where if you say anything un-PC online, not only can you be fired from your job and blacklisted from polite society, you can be shut out of the financial system. You can be banned from social media. You can be banned from free speech. You can be banned from PayPal, banned from banking. You know, we have individuals like Robert Spencer who have been shut out by Visa and MasterCard. Alex Jones has obviously been completely shut out of everything. It's only a matter of time before he's lost access to PayPal and all the social media, as well as video streaming sites like YouTube. It's only a matter of time before like Visa and MasterCard and Swift shut him off, and basically the only way he'll be able to sell his products is through direct mail order or cryptocurrency. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. You know, the only effective resistance that could be waged against these companies is through government action. Okay, all these alt-tech sites that people are touting as alternatives to Twitter or whatnot, they don't work in various fashions. Either because of the inadequacy of their management. Gab is a perfect example of that. Everyone talks about Gab being fantastic. Gab, I've talked about that before. Gab is a terrible platform. It's terrible on a technical level. It's terrible in terms of management. It's become a breeding ground, a sort of a honeypot for all of the most retarded white Uyghur nationalist retards who just want to scream about neo-Nazism and the 14 words and shit all over everything. No one with a brain wants to use Gab. you've got sites like Minds or BitChute that may, that have some promise in some respects, but they're technologically behind the curve. It, you know, BitChute is the big new alt video sharing website, but the problem with BitChute is that you can't stream with it. So the most popular type of content on YouTube right now is streams, and, until BitChute can implement streaming capability, there's really no way to use it. But the other problem with alt tech sites is that the internet tends towards centralization in some respects. You know, Beckloth has talked about this. We don't need a million video sharing sites. We don't need a million Twitter clones. We don't need a million Facebook clones. We don't need any of this stuff. And it's just cumbersome to use. You know, imagine having to, in order to get your message out, upload your videos, your podcast to like 8 million different sites. You know, you got YouTube, Vimeo, BitChute, obviously, DTube. You've got, you know, Dailymotion. It's time consuming. And the number of the audience for each of these individual sites is much, much smaller than YouTube. You know, same for Gab or all the other Twitter clones versus Twitter. We don't need, we're never going to have a situation where these alt tech platforms will be a viable replacement due to this factor. So there's really only one way to rein in the power of Silicon Valley, and that's through government action. And I don't think it's forthcoming. I mean, it could happen. I mean, Trump has made some comments publicly to that effect. But until I see some serious action from him, I'm not going to, you know, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Hoping that Trump is going to do something about the massive abuses of power that Silicon Valley corporations are doing is like hoping you'll win the lottery tomorrow and leveraging all your income to do that, you know, but spending your entire paycheck on lottery tickets. Yeah, you could win the lottery tomorrow, but, you know, more often than not, you'll probably just end up wasting your money. So I suspect after the midterm elections next month, when the blue wave fails to materialize, and this is starting to be reflected in polling, the blue wave is not going to happen. Senate candidates in red states, Democratic Senate candidates who are leading in places like Arizona, North Dakota, Indiana, they're falling behind the polls in a big way due to how the Dems completely screwed themselves with the Kavanaugh thing. The blue wave isn't going to happen. We're going to see the Republicans make gains in the Senate. They'll lose maybe two or three governorships, and they'll lose maybe 10 House seats at most. But the Republicans will still firmly be in control after November. When this happens, the censorship is just going to enhance, you know, beyond what we've already seen. We didn't see much censorship compared to now prior to Trump's election because, you know, Dorsey, Zuckerberg et al., they sincerely thought that Hillary was going to win. We didn't see the mass bannings, mass purgings from Twitter, et cetera, that we saw. We definitely didn't see mass purging from the financial system prior to Trump's election. You know, people weren't getting banned from PayPal, or, you know, Roosh wasn't getting his books banned from Amazon prior to Trump's election. It's only going to get worse. They're going to crack down on everyone. For all I know, in a month, I won't have any sort of platform. You know, they'll kick me off of YouTube. They'll kick me off of SoundCloud. My web host will completely shut down my website. My domain name will be seized, you know. And we are going to see camps. We're going to see people arrested for hate speech in the very near future in the United States, not just in Europe, in the United States. And even if it isn't for hate speech, they'll get you on. They'll sting you with something, like what happened to Corey Wilson, the Defense Distributed guy. Dude is providing 3D printed guns, which is perceived as a major threat to the existing order, and the feds decide to pop him on for supposedly paying an underage girl he met off a sugar dating website. Obvious bullshit. You know, the feds wanted to get him. They found a reason to get him. And even if you're squeaky clean, all of us are the sheer number of laws in the books at any given time mean that all of us are breaking the law in some capacity, even if we're not aware of it. So that is our future. I believe that the right side, the truth, will win out. But the problem is, you know, there is a lot of ruin in our nation. There's a lot of ruin in an economic system. There's a lot of ruin in an ideological system. So what we're going to see is even worse. We're going to see even worse censorship and deplatforming and oppression between now and whenever this horrible system that we live under is destroyed. I don't want to be a downer for you, but that's where it is. For all I know, this could be one of the last few things I'm able to put up on the internet before we're all forced onto the dark web or something. And I'm prepared for that. I've made my peace with it, you know. I have gone out of my way in the past year and a half to not try to get attention online. I used to be very, you know, braggadocious, obviously. I was on Twitter, you know, fucking attacking people, making fun of the left, you know, trolling like crazy. I try not to do that anymore. I obviously want to grow my audience. I obviously want to more people to hear my words and hear my thoughts and share them and whatnot. But I don't engage in the kinds of publicity getting stunts I did 2 years ago because there's simply very little benefit to it. There's very little reward to doing so. You could get, used to be trolling the left reliably got you attention. Now it reliably gets you deplatformed. It reliably gets, and it doesn't get you an audience in exchange. I'm lucky compared to most. I haven't been as deplatformed heavily as major figures, and I would rather keep it that way. You know, I would rather keep it that way. I don't want to get the attention of the electric eye. And the other thing too is I'm building, a website, Terror House Magazine, and soon Terror House Press. That's my number one focus. You know, not simply waiting in the kiddie pool of political commentary and trolling the left and owning the libs constantly. I want to build an institution that will outlast the news cycle. I want to build an institution that will outlast all these little petty disagreements, all these little petty conflicts, all this drama that's going on right now. I want something that I will be remembered for. I want something that will do genuine good for the world. And I believe Terror House Press is that. That's why I'm focusing on that, because that is my gateway towards doing that kind of a thing. All these petty conflicts, all this this nonsense, all of this drama is going to be forgotten. And I don't intend to waste my precious my finite life, as Aaron Clary would put it, my finite life with doing all this stuff. So you know, so it's both a desire for a change in my life, and it's a desire for a change. It's a response to how the world works now. You know, it's unfortunate. That I can't do the kinds of things I did 5-4 years ago and get the same reaction, but guess what? The world has moved on. You know, you can beat your fists on the wall, demanding that the world will change to your whims, or you can adapt yourself to the world. You can complain about how unfair reality is, or you can adapt to reality, and I'm adapting to reality. You know, this is something that Roosh went over in his recent book, Game, you know, the book that's been banned from Amazon. He talks about how horrible it is for men out there in terms of finding women, in terms of starting relationships. He says straight up, if you're starting out in the game now and you're a young man, you're going to have to work way harder for far less than I got when I was your age. But, you know, there's nothing you can do about that, you know? You know, this is the reality of male-female relations. The smartphone, social media, feminism, they've driven a wedge between men and women, an effective wedge, so that you have to basically, when you're trying to woo a woman, you're competing against the entire world, since she has access to the entire world, an entire army of slavering cucks via Tinder or Instagram or other forms of social media. You know, and there's not much that can be done to change this. You know, this change is primarily technology driven, and humanity never goes backwards technologically. It always goes forwards. And as I commented in my review of Game, which a link can be found in the description of the podcast to that. It's on Terror House Magazine. I've seen the damage wrought by all these trends extending even to so-called traditionalist areas. You know, people think of Hungary and Poland and Eastern Europe as this bastion of right-wing nationalism. And in many ways it is, but the negative trends that define American women and have ruined them and have ruined American culture are penetrating there too. Smartphone addiction, piercings, tattoos, obesity, attention seeking, attention whoring behavior. They're all taking root in Hungary. You know, right before I moved out of Budapest, you know, in my neighborhood, there was around the bend that had, it had been formed there while I was living there, a hybrid tattoo parlor slash cafe slash bar. You know, there were a lot of Hungarian women with tattoos. It's very trashy looking. They dressed very trashily. Even in Ukraine, supposedly traditionalist Ukraine, you got women with tattoos now. You know, in Lviv, I'd guess maybe at least one out of every nine women has a tattoo. I'm in Georgia right now. Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan look like holdouts to a certain extent, but even then I can see like these trends creeping around the corner. Like I see, you know, you see the occasional tattoo parlor here, but no one's immune. That's my point. These changes are global and they're not going to be reversed short of some cataclysmic event. And I believe that a cataclysmic event could happen and is very likely to happen with the dissolution of the current world order, but banking your future prospects, whether it's romantic or career prospects, on a meteor hitting the earth or some sort of sea change or a nuclear war or something is very foolhardy. So the only choice we have to deal with any of this is to adapt. You know, I'm adapting to the marketplace. I'm adapting to censorship. I'm adapting to market demand for products. I'm adapting to the demonic energy in the air. And that's the other thing, you know, there's just something wrong. You know, even if I was not inclined to believe in the supernatural or, you know, religion, there's something super, there's just, with people today in the US and whatnot, and some people, there's just something wrong with them that can't be chalked up to natural explanations. It's not just personality disorders or technology, it's something else. It's something else, some sort of dark energy. I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it. You know, the Irony Bros use the term demons, you know, and I think that's fairly accurate, either literally or metaphorically. There's something wrong, man. We're headed for interesting times, and my plan is to adapt as best I can. And my hope is that you will be able to adapt as best you can as well as continue to follow me for as long as I'm able to put my thoughts out there and have a public presence. You know, If after the midterm elections I get blinked out of existence, well, you know, it was a nice run. I'll be sad about it, but you know, I can either, as I said, I can either pound my fists on the wall demanding change, or I can adapt. And adapting is all you really can do. You can't control the world. You can't control how other people react. You can only control yourself. You can only control your reaction. You can only control the way you cope with the changes around you. And that's what I plan on doing. A couple more notes before I go. I am considering doing a little fundraiser starting next week or very soon to raise money so that I can go to Warsaw next month and report on the 100th anniversary of Poland's independence, the Independence March they have in Warsaw. It's a big event every year. It was a very big event last year. You know, the media was denouncing it as a quote-unquote neo-Nazi march, even though it was Polish nationalists celebrating their liberation from Germany. And I figure it's something I'm positioned, well-positioned to report on, given my location and what I'm able to do. I may be doing a telethon on my YouTube channel, a live stream, in order to promote this. I'm not sure yet. But stay tuned to mattforney.com for more details on that. I'm implementing a donation system that isn't cryptocurrency based so that those of you who aren't into Bitcoin and whatnot will actually be able to contribute to this fundraiser in some fashion. So check that out and check out everything else I'm doing. And that will conclude this episode of The Matt Forney Show. Be sure to check in every day at mattforney.com for my latest articles, podcasts, videos, and other projects. Subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/user/realmattforney and my Twitch channel at twitch.tv/mattforney. Subscribe to The Matt Forney Show on SoundCloud, as well as get audio-only episodes, podcast episodes of Matt Forney Live at soundcloud.com/mattforneyshow. You can also find us on the iTunes store. My books can be found at mattforneybooks.com. They're also available via Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other fine retailers. If you're listening to this podcast on SoundCloud, please like it by hitting the heart icon in the player and repost it to your accounts by hitting the repost button. If you're watching this via YouTube, don't forget to like it by hitting the thumbs up icon below the player and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already by hitting subscribe the subscribe button. Be sure to click the bell icon after subscribing to ensure you get push notifications for all my videos and live streams. If you're listening to this via the iTunes Store, I'd greatly appreciate it if you take the time to rate the podcast, rate the show, which will improve its ranking in the search algorithms and allow the good gospel of Matt Forney to be spread far and wide across the land. And just a reminder, for podcast listeners, the Matt Forney Live airs live every Monday and Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. We also do other shows throughout the week. We take your calls live on the air as well as your comments via Super Chat and Streamlabs. If you're a podcast listener and you want to leave a comment that I will read on the next episode of Matt Forney Live, go to streamlabs.com/Matthew Forney and leave your comment there. Illegitimate uncoverundum. Don't let the bastards grind you down. I'm Matt Forney. Thanks for listening all these years, guys, through this wacky ride on the Matt Forney Show. I'm out.